two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready?
What's going on here?
Resistance is futile.
This,
indeed you are, Paul,
is...
It's in my hand, Paul!
Fan Effect.
42 years of Star Wars comes to an end with the rise of... Okay. That gives you an idea of where this is going to go.
Here we go.
42 years of Star Wars comes to an end with the Rise of Skywalker, which has opened. We've all had a chance to see it and stew on it for a couple of days. I've seen it twice now. And so we are going to go spoiler full on this episode of Fan Effect, sponsored by Larry H. Miller Megaplex. That's actually where I've seen both the times. Miller Megaplex.
By the way, let's get this out of the way first. It is not Megaplex's fault for that movie at all. I don't blame them in any way, shape, or form. They are simply the vehicle for providing the entertainment, and it is not their fault. I do not hold them responsible.
I blame Rian Johnson.
Oh, of course.
My blame lasts with it. Rian Johnson maybe deserves a little bit of it. I'll even throw Mark Hamill into the mix, and I can explain why later.
All right. So as you can tell, we already have very strong feelings, as I'm sure everybody does. Star Wars is... There is no movie franchise like it in Hollywood. I think you could only claim maybe that the Marvel Cinematic Universe could even approach it both in popularity and in passion.
Except that it's organized.
Well.
And they have a plot.
Okay, we'll get to that, Adam. We'll get to that.
Wait,
I promise
you.
So, I'm Andy Farnsworth. We've got the old fanboys back together, plus Ryan Meese. We've got Tyson Webb. Tyson, good to have you.
Thank you.
Adam Thomas makes
the derailment train is back.
Oh, my goodness.
Derailing all conversation to return the focus back on what I felt was a catastrophe of movie making. Next.
And he has done that every time he's spoken so far.
How many texts did I hit you with yesterday during the tail end of the marathon at the aforementioned Megaplex?
Because
you were watching Return of the Jedi.
I'm at Star Wars saturation because I saw all 9 movies in a row. Over 24 hours.
Yeah.
I did not sleep during any of it. I was impressed
with
myself.
Are you
kidding?
Yeah. Oh, that's why you haven't shaved.
Hey, tell me about the funk in the theater about three or four hours in, though.
You know what? We're going to actually do Herb Scribner from Deseret News and I.
Hey, you know who else didn't
shave?
We're going
to do a podcast about that.
Oh, good.
Tomorrow.
I can't wait to listen.
Han Solo didn't shave, so apparently where he's been, they're still growing 5 o'clock shadows
God.
There.
Just a second. You're going to get your chance, Adam. Just wait.
Sorry.
Just wait.
Sorry.
So.
Anyway, I'm here to bring balance to the force. That's my introduction. I'm trying to bring balance to the force.
From a certain point of view.
Star Wars, eh? No, just kidding. Let's get it started. First of all, I'm going to be a very strict judge about this. I want each of your reactions, no more than 2 minutes, so get your thoughts together, no more than 2 minutes, and then we will go into deeper depth, we'll break some things down, but I wanted your honest reactions when the movie was done. How did you feel? Tyson, go.
I liked it.
You can go a little longer than that.
Oh, okay. And I'm not supposed to interrupt, right?
No,
okay.
I'm
not supposed
to
interrupt.
You get a two-minute turn.
Listen,
okay.
Star Wars for me, I was pulled into the Star Wars universe very young, at a young age. Star Wars to me, it was all about the spectacle of it, the beauty of it, the cool ships, the great masks, like Darth Vader, like this.
The lightsabers.
The lightsabers, like all of this wonder, right? And story was always kind of second.
Okay.
Second seat to me. I never thought that Star Wars was like this super well-written trilogy or anything like that. But I loved the journey, and I loved the characters, and you could really connect with the characters. So I did. I guess I won't get into anything else. But
he was
beautifully shot. It was cinematically amazing. The sound design, which I really geek out over, was incredible. Every time Kylo's TIE Fighter was on screen, I was just like giddy.
Which one of the four? Because I think four of them were on screen and destroyed.
No interrupted.
No, just he kidding. Only had two.
That really wasn't a complaint. Stole one and sank it, destroyed it. She split open the other one on the planet, and
that's
then he
true.
Had a third.
He had more than one. Yeah. He came in a regular TIE Fighter at the end.
The one that Rey stole is the one she ditched, isn't it?
Yeah, that's when she burned on Octo.
That's when she burned on Octo, and then he flew a regular TIE Fighter to the Sith Temple.
Oh, okay. Oh, so, at the very beginning.
There were only two.
No, the first one was his interceptor that she chopped the wing off later.
Yeah. I'm sorry for derailing on actually a meaningless point that was not a criticism.
It's all good. What I'm trying to say is I love the spectacle. I do have problems with the film, but overall, I liked it, and I liked it more than the episode 8.
Okay. Ryan.
We're not going to go Adam.
No, we'll get to Adam. We're probably going to go Adam.
Adam has a lot to say. We're just going to let him go. Because once he starts, you know.
Okay. Go ahead. Timer's going.
So my issues don't even start with this movie. It starts with The Force Awakens. The biggest problem that this movie suffers with is that the characters that were originally established with The Force Awakens just are not interesting. Okay, and they've been trying to drag it out. And then you have Rian Johnson with The Last Jedi that throws in just basically nonsensical plot twists in a miasma of crazy...
Such as?
Craziness. Every single plot twist.
No, I mean, like, what do you think is one of the ones that maybe other people like?
Snoke just getting killed.
Okay.
All of his misdirection and anyway.
No. Yeah, you can talk. Oh, just talk into
just
the
talk
mic.
Into the mic. Sorry. Yes. I'm talking toward them, so maybe I'll move it over
that's
here.
A
that's
good
that's
idea.
Better. There's just every plot twist. I mean, just it didn't really do anything
interesting. Were there really a lot of plot twists in that movie, though? It was all about running out of space gas.
Yeah.
No.
And
saving horses.
That's the thing. It didn't really do anything to the plot. It was nonsensical.
I don't think it moved the characters forward. Yeah, but we'll get into this more.
No, and that's what I'm saying. And so you end up with J.J. Abrams taking over after they fired someone else that was supposed to do it. And
that the one Colin Trevorrow was supposed to direct?
Yes, he actually had a story writing credit for Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah, probably because he came up with some bum idea that still made it in there. I had to give him a credit.
And so,
thanks.
If I were to write an article on this, which I probably will soon. It'll be titled The Unwinnable Battle. The Unwinnable War, because he was fighting a war that no matter what he did in this film, he could not win.
I think that's a fair point because you got to, and that's why I started off with the 42 years have built up to this. You have 42 years of expectation. It's going to be difficult to wrap it up in a completely satisfactory way to everybody. So the question is, can you wrap it up in a satisfactory way?
So they didn't
to
even try.
Anybody?
So the answer is don't even try.
With how divisive the last one was. It was the most divisive film in this franchise.
It's a film that made $1.5 billion globally at the box office.
And made a lot of people pissed off.
It made $1.5 billion at the box office, while Solo underwhelmed and made what?
A third of that.
People sucked The Last Jedi into becoming like the number 9 grossing movie of all time
But how much of the follow-up films were in reaction to The Last Jedi? I know that
that's on management. That's on management.
Yeah.
That's anyway, reactionary.
So let me just finish up really quick what I thought about this film. Even though it had all those faults, I actually enjoyed it more than the other two. There's some storytelling faults that drove me nuts, like exposition like crazy. I'm like, why are you doing that? But other than that, there were themes and there were actually things that actually made me care about Rey's character for the first time. I just didn't think it was a strong character. Like, I wanted her to be strong, but anyway. So, that being said, I give it probably the highest score of, you know, if I were to give it a score. We'll get on that later, but I'll give it the highest one that I've given these sequels.
Okay.
I think it is incredibly disingenuous to say that J.J. Abrams or any of the producers were in a tough spot. They created this situation. They created the movie. They had full freedom to do whatever story they wanted, and they chose to retell a story in a half-you-know-what manner. They chose to randomly introduce the fact that the Emperor's been alive for the past 36 years with zero setup, zero anything foreshadowing the previous two movies, which told me, yet again, another J.J. Abrams project never had an ending. He never went into this having any idea where he wanted to take the characters, where he wanted to take the series, where he wanted to take anything. Now, true, he did the first movie, wasn't responsible for the second movie. But when he came back, he's the one who made all the decisions on how we're going to proceed forward, and the other, you know, producers and directors. They're the ones who reheated the Return of the Jedi plot in a haphazard manner. They're the ones who introduced needlessly awful new characters that served no purpose other than to say, Rian Johnson, you don't count. Nothing that you did matters. Why Rose would even show up in this movie for three or four lines, it almost seems more like an insult to just cutting her out of the movie altogether. And yet, they want to just leave her in there and not have her interact with Finn in really any meaningful way.
Yeah, so they have to like a pat on the shoulder as they walk by each other.
Yeah, after all of that in the last movie,
she saved his life and kissed him.
Just get a pat on the shoulder and let's hook Finn up with someone else who has this same backstory too. The
Janna.
Ridiculous character. This whole thing with Carrie Russell. She points a gun at Poe's head, and I started laughing next to Ryan in the movie theater because I saw it coming. In my head, I said, within 1 minute of screen time, she is going to be leading them. Mm-hmm. They are going to implicitly trust her, and they're going to be a team working together within 1 minute of screen time. And I was wrong. I think it was 45 seconds. It was the Rick and Morty episode from 1 month ago personified. USOB, I'm in. They're getting together a heist. And I was appalled by just how it was just so haphazard, so mishmashed, so thrown together with no real sense of, this movie was a catastrophe. And I just don't understand how anybody can be satisfied with, the Emperor's been alive for 36 years and hiding out building a super fleet. Oh, he didn't want to jump in after Hux killed an entire star system and collapsed an entire galactic government and killed billions of people. Didn't want to jump in at that moment and say, I'm back and take over. No, we're going to wait until they come to us 3 years later. Again, 36 years after everyone thought he died. Really? He was just hiding out the whole time. And of course, in typical Abrams fashion, we just have to come up with a bigger weapon. We can't do this through writing. We can't do this through character development or creating stakes of our own. It just has to be another type of weapon that's going to kill everybody. And this time it was little mini star, just little mini Death Stars that are actually Star Destroyers with the little Death Star cannon.
That was your timer.
Come on, man. I know we have a lot to talk about, but that's a good intro.
I know we're going to get a little. I know you got a lot more thoughts, and we're going to be able to get them all.
And Hux is a spy.
No, time to go.
Come on, man.
For me, when I finished watching it, I was weirdly just kind of like in the middle. I when it was over, I was like, okay. And I really got emotional at some parts. I thought some parts were done really well.
Hux's whole scene was
that
unexpected,
was part that got me really,
well
really
done, and it was an important part of the story that I wanted to know more about, wasn't expecting, and it was a true good moment.
That scene actually makes me like Force Awakens better, because one of the things that I hated about Force Awakens, one of the things I actually want you to do before we're finished is I want you to like rank your top three Star Wars movies that you, when you walked out of, you, and it doesn't matter how you feel about them subsequently or as you watch them over again and over again, but like when you walked out, you were just like, whoa, blown
top
away
helmet?
Kind of a thing.
Wow, that's a good one.
We'll talk about that, because regardless of what you thought later, but when you walked out, you just thought it was so awesome. But that's later. So that's kind of what I was hoping for. I would like at the end of 40 years, 9 movies, and things that I've invested so much time and energy into to feel like, wow, that was emotionally satisfying. And if the biggest criticism that I can give to Star Wars is that, or the biggest thing that I think is not their fault is that Endgame showed us how it could be done.
Well, that's
Endgame set
if
up
you have a
huge
plan.
Thing. Right.
That's
right.
It.
Right.
That,
and we'll get to that. I will definitely get to that, because that's, I think, what we have to, I think we all agree on that. And that will put a lot of the flaws into context, is the lack of the plan. But Endgame, you could walk out of a big giant epic where the stakes just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And, you know, if you were to just show somebody the portal scene where all the Avengers come out of the portals and fight all the bad guys from the whole series, you just looking at that scene alone without any context, you'd be like, oh, great, whoopity-doo, you just got CGI going everywhere. But by investing you in all the characters all the way up, having the big knockdown and then having the payoff at the end, it just felt good. Like, it's a three-hour movie that I didn't care was 3 hours long, that I didn't feel like dragged anywhere. So that we get to The Rise of Skywalker, I was kind of hoping for something I'd poured so much my own personal investment into. I'd hoped I would feel more, like just satisfied. And that's what I was hoping. I didn't feel that. I didn't hate it, although I didn't like, because I really liked The Last Jedi, I didn't like how he walked some of it back, in particular.
Some of
to
it?
Me, the, to, well, right, but I also thought
he apologies took... Apologies to the entire movie. Well, the extended universe. It's non-canon as far as that
was concerned.
He took
a whole bunch of threads and then weaved it into the story, acknowledging that those things took place. But, you know, like...
By having Rose catches, on screen for 30
Luke
seconds.
When Luke catches the lightsaber... Yeah. And then says, that's no way to treat the weapon of a Jedi, throwing it away. That, to me, was the biggest middle finger to Rian Johnson, was when he had Luke do the opposite of what he did at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah. Oh, and Force Ghosts can now manipulate matter in the physical universe. So all that,
well,
that's not...
Yoda
that's not
did
fast.
That.
Yeah, but Yoda did that with lightning.
No, he also hit him in the head with his cane.
Yeah.
Oh, in the last movie?
In Last Jedi,
that's... Okay, that's a little bit of a difference than, you know, I just...
Yeah. But see, once they did that, though... I was kind of hoping to see towards the end all the Force Ghosts coming out to have a fight.
Okay, let's go to that moment. That is a moment that was missed that I actually went, okay, if we're going to go this far and you're going to do the whole whispers with Samuel L. Jackson and all these other actors that clearly did a line or two in the whisper hey, that's
so
good.
So here's who I have so
force
far.
Force Ghost them. Do it.
That's Anakin, Obi-Wan, Yoda, Mace, Qui-Gon, Kanan, which I didn't like.
Kanan Jarrus.
Ahsoka, and I think Kieru Mundi's in there as well.
And Adi Gallia.
Adi Gallia's in there?
Yeah. She's the one who was on the speeder bike got shot up by the clone troopers when the Order 66 happened.
So I can't decide if I like the way that JJ did it or if I wanted to see like an Avengers
really
scene
thought,
where they all
really
kind of came
that
in.
The ghosts would all be like standing there behind Rey towards the
I think
the
it would have made more sense because, seriously, if you're going to bring the Emperor back, the way he went out is kind of dumb. I mean, how many times has he been shot with his own lightning? I know it was really powerful this time or whatever, and he kind of disintegrated
this time
like
it actually peeled
like Thanos,
the flesh off his face.
Yeah, he kind of Thanosed it, but you know, I think it would have been really powerful to see Rey with both lightsabers like pushing towards the Emperor and like, I don't know, the Force ghosts of all the other Jedi.
Just standing behind her.
I don't know about standing behind her, but being engaged somehow like through the Force, like I don't know how that would happen.
Doing like the Qui-Gon prayer or something like that.
Yeah,
you know?
Like being like stepping forward with her so you can see the solidarity and everything that they're like whispering about.
Yeah, they whispered, but
I can't decide
also,
if
like,
that would have been hokey or would have been awesome.
They couldn't actually, since they're going to, I did like that they incorporated expanded
universe.
It would
have been expensive, I know that.
You know, Ahsoka and Kanan are both from the animated series, so... That was kind of a...
Yeah, Kanan should
like
not have
was,
been in there. I'm sorry.
Well, they had to have somebody from Rebels.
Well, they had Ahsoka. She was in Rebels.
She was from...
Why did they have to have somebody from Rebels? Yeah. Oh, it's because it's a Disney Star Wars thing.
Because Rebels was before Disney. Wasn't
it?
No.
Rebels is a Disney product.
Well, whatever.
Clone Wars is before Disney.
Shut up. I wanted it to be right. No. But I like that because, to me, that was a recognition of Dave Filoni's story contributions.
Yeah, Dave Filoni
and
also
Dave
did.
Dave Filoni is awesome.
Yeah.
And so,
but he also did Clone Wars, and so there's Ahsoka.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It was represented right there. And that was also a George Lucas product. So,
maybe Disney wanted some of their own stuff.
Of course they did.
I just thought some of the character development, it just went off the rails. And I don't know what the thinking was with the whole spy plot and General Hux. They were trying to get rid of General
Hux.
He's just a bad character. But why? No, he wasn't a bad character. He served
thing.
A role that was in every Star Wars movie that was enjoyable. If you're going to do the whole fan service thing, so we need a useless, incompetent Imperial general at the top.
Interesting thing. Okay, so at the end of the marathon, most of those people, there was three of us critics that were in the marathon that had already seen Rise of Skywalker. So I didn't have to focus so hard on the movie as I did the first time I saw it. I also wanted to see how was the rest of the audience receiving it. When Huck said he was the spy, half the theater cheered.
Yeah, I remember
like,
that.
No,
from
they,
the
screen? Did they do
from
that
the screen?
Screening?
Yes, from the screening, yes.
They were probably sick of his character. I mean, even though...
No, not when he got killed. When he announced he was the spy
I'm
to
the
them.
Spy.
Yes.
Delivered with the
I was
exact
surprised
kind of...
But you
that.
Know at that point that he's going to die, though.
I didn't know what was going to happen with him at that point. I laughed when he got shot.
That whole contrivance makes no sense. The one little part, we know that he probably has no love for Kylo Ren. We saw him pull the gun out in Last Jedi and put it away at the last second. you don't own the libs, so to speak, own Kylo Ren by helping the resistance. You do that by setting Kylo Ren up to fail, but not by helping the resistance. You've tried to kill them and snuff them out for two movies. And that's how it manifests your revenge on Kylo Ren. I'm going to help the resistance now. No. You find some way to sabotage Kylo Ren.
It was definitely a stretch on his pettiness because he's been petty through the whole thing.
And he doesn't want to kill the two people that got him force choked and slammed all over the place by Snoke for two movies.
Yeah, you think he'd at least shoot Poe and then let the other two go.
Yeah. You think so? But no, I'm going to let the three heroes go.
Wait,
you forget. To own the libs. Okay.
Maybe General Hux saw that Poe had plot armor on and he knew that his blaster bolt wouldn't work.
I groaned when he said, "Give me the gun." And I.
Yeah, so did I, actually.
I just. Great. And then when he got killed, 2 minutes later, good. You should have just done that at the beginning. If that was your plan for that character, just kill him off unceremoniously.
Well, here's
just
the question.
Have him die in an explosion.
I know why they made General Pride. I actually thought it would have worked better if they had reversed it and General Pride was the spy and Hux was talking to the Emperor the whole time.
There's nothing wrong with having Hux be Hux to the end and get his comeuppance like every other
jerk. I don't think the Emperor
would
ever talk to Hux.
Huh?
Well, no, it made sense. General Pride had to be old enough in order to have served the Emperor the first time, so at least for that little bit of dialogue.
Okay, why can't Hux be one of the few people who was in on it, that he knew with the Emperor? Why couldn't that be? Why did we have to go through...
That would have been slightly unbelievable. I mean, he's completely
but the Emperor's... But he's not completely... He destroyed seven planets. He destroyed seven planets and killed an entire galactic government.
He was only made to look incompetent by Rian Johnson.
Exactly.
And that's fair.
And that's kind of most of my
point. And it was the Dreadnought guy who screwed up at the beginning.
Yeah.
The Dreadnought guy didn't screw up. He was the one who was the voice of reason. He was the one that's like, we should have scrambled our flighters 5 bloody minutes ago. He's like, he's taking out our deck guns. We're just trying to charge up the main gun to blast their stuff. But, he has to wait for the order, and Hux is engaged in this back and forth with Poe, wasting time. That's what the Dreadnought general. I love that Dreadnought general. If he was in charge, the First Order would have been in a lot better shape. But,
yep.
He's the one that
you
got
mean the general who died when the Dreadnought exploded? Okay, yes.
That is also my point. that's a much stronger character than Hux ever was. And, anyway.
Well, but the whole thing is that when it's all said and done...
But regardless, if you don't like his character...
is Adam Driver and Daisy Ridley's... It's Kylo and Rey. The story is them. Mm-hmm. As it turns out, it was both Kylo's turning into a villain, because J.J. made a lot of comments about that during the Force Awakens publicity tour. Kylo's not a finished villain. He's still growing into it. His, final moment was killing his dad. And that's why I thought Rian Johnson did really well, was saying, look, okay, you did this thing, but you're not committed to this. That's what made the whole thing with Daisy and or Kylo and Rey's relationship so fascinating, which it then I thought J.J. did a good job of paying it off, leading it together. As I watched it the second time, I have so many thoughts. I wanted to write them all down. But their relationship then becomes the crux of the sequel trilogy. But you have to look at the overarching thing now. Now that we have three trilogies, once you've done that, then you have three-act plays. You have, but each of the acts has to represent something, which now means that the middle act has to be... there has to be something that connects the three if it's going to be a total 9-episode story. So choosing to have the Emperor be the end makes sense from that point of view. But, and this is...
Not if you're just suddenly going to introduce it with three words at the beginning of the crawl.
That's what I'm saying.
Absurd.
No, I agree with you.
Speak.
I agree with you. I'm just saying...
No. If you couldn't do it properly, then that wasn't the right thing to do. It can't be the right thing to do. It was never the right thing to do if it was never a plan for the seventh episode. You can't
right
just suddenly bring back the Emperor after 36 years without any hint. If you had shown me hints in the previous two movies that even Snoke was being controlled, or maybe Hux drops a line that there's somebody else out there that has kind of some stakes in this, or that they're planning something in the background.
Well, that's the problem with the whole thing. There was no plan. Kathleen Kennedy should be fired because there was no plan from start to finish.
I'm fine with that.
You said Kathleen Kennedy should be fired in the theater before we walked out.
That's the problem with this entire trilogy, and that's why it really has no substance. It's all show, and there's no cohesiveness because there's no plan from the beginning.
Let me give you one
example.
That's
why they couldn't drop these hints. That's why Rian Johnson took it in the way he did. I mean, I applaud Rian for doing what he did. I don't like the Last Jedi, but I applaud him for trying to make Star Wars something different, blowing holes into the old tried-and-true formula and trying to take it into some new, exciting direction. But obviously, they didn't land with all the fans. and there was controversy. And so what did Disney do? They went right back to what's safe and paid a ton of fan service and just finished it up. The thing is, this could have been a stellar few years for a new Star Wars trilogy, and it just wasn't. None of the characters, other than maybe Kylo and maybe Rey, matter. They lost an entire opportunity with Finn. The stormtrooper that defects and that throws it all away. He could have had an amazing arc, and he's a background character.
The strongest idea for a character that they had, and they didn't establish it in the first one.
And I mean, but where do you take it? I mean, without a plan, that's what we get.
We see, when you're talking about fans, let me give you a symptom of that problem, and we'll compare it to The Mandalorian here. The Sandcrawler and the Jawas at the end of Rise of Skywalker were off to the side. They panned across. Aha! We got to see the Sandcrawler in Okini! We got to hear that.
Mm-hmm.
But it had nothing to do with the plot. It was just there to be there.
Yeah.
But in the second episode of The Mandalorian, the Sandcrawler and the Jawas,
that was just to establish they were on Tatooine,
became a critical part of that episode in the plot. We got to learn more about the Jawas. We got to learn. We got to go inside
their
ship. And it was a fun episode. Yeah. They were there for a purpose. But yet in Rise of Skywalker, Tatooine is just a place where they can get another cheap shot of the two suns setting.
Well, that's
and
where
if
they
we're
have
on Tatooine,
to end it, obviously.
We gotta have the little Jawas mentioned.
Well, here's
here.
The thing, I mean, and they missed an opportunity. Instead of Utini, they should have been like, Suka! As the Millennium Falcon flew by. Have you not watched The Mandalorian?
Yeah.
The egg, Suka.
Yeah. Oh, that's what they were saying.
The
okay.
whole episode, they're screaming this. It's freaking hilarious.
And I loved, by the way, on a side note, I loved how that was their end game all the time. An awesome snack.
Yes.
That's what it was.
That's such a joke. It's perfect.
They stripped his ship so they could get an egg.
Dave Filoni, yeah. Everybody.
No, they stripped his ship. They were going to do great things with those parts, but all right, if you really want it and you've already evaporated us, yeah, well, go get us that awesome Cadbury egg.
Give us a really big Cadbury egg. A furry Cadbury egg because we're hungry.
Because when they get it, they crack it open. I'm like, they're not going to. Oh, yeah. They're going to
eat it. Oh,
yeah.
But you see, that was great. They expanded. There's nothing wrong with pulling out these little pieces from Star Wars lore and expanding and improving and making it more. I love that. I wanted to see more Jawas in action other than just a fleeting little mention or some guys in the background or something like that. If you wanted to do that with sand people, fine. The Mandalorian did that too. When the guy turned around, he's like, tell him right there. And the sand people. And again, they're going after binoculars. I love how they're always going after binoculars. They just love binoculars.
Well, one thing I want to do
mean Binox?
Is
Binox.
I want to. Did you think that the fan service was too much? Did you like any of the fan service?
See, so for what me, was though, the fan I absorbed it all. And
it was
I
too
loved
shallow.
It was
too shallow.
See.
Chewie
getting a medal.
I agree with both of you on this.
Chewie got a medal.
Because the writing for the fan service wasn't there.
Here's the thing. I don't think he got a medal. I think she had Han's medal. I don't think it was a, oh, hey, we didn't put this.
Because
I think in the book he got a medal, and I think in the comics he got a medal. I don't think that it was Chewie never got it in the movie. Here's your medal. I think it was actually, here, Han, this is Han's. You should have it. Mm-hmm. That's how I took it, and I hope that's what it was. Because it was the Yavin medal. Who knows how she got it anyway?
I mean, if you came in as an outsider, if you came in as an outsider, you never seen any movie before this. You got to look at the fan service in that light. Is it going to work as a storytelling part?
Yeah.
That particular one, it's not necessarily good or bad because it could have been taken as just like an heirloom that's giving to Chewie.
It
right?
probably shouldn't have happened, honestly.
Because if you came in not knowing anything,
nobody thought about it.
It wasn't that one's not the worst one. Is what
no,
I'm saying.
You're right.
And there, I can't think of any off the top of my head, but there were worse. I mean, I think the Jawa one is probably like the worst one. It really serves absolutely no purpose.
Well, and like Andy said, I think that just established that we were on Tatooine before she landed in front of the homestead.
To me, the fan services that were a little, like, I love fan service because you don't spend that much time watching and learning something to not be able to spot little things like that. That's part of the fun in a way. Finding some of the Easter eggs.
And normally, I think J.J. Abrams does a great job with stuff.
Yeah,
like
he
that.
Did it really well in The Force Awakens. For the most part, at least giving you moments where you feel good or like, ooh, I noticed that. That's really cool.
Like the reveal of the Millennium Falcon, for example.
Yes. Although I have an issue with that because I still have a problem with the fact that that he put the Millennium Falcon on Jakku so he could get Rey into the Millennium Falcon so that he could introduce Han and Chewie. I didn't like the fact that Han didn't have his ship and had been devolved all the way back to a smuggler. which is like, okay, what was the point of his whole entire arc?
Yeah.
But, you know,
agreed.
A little bit about, you know, having your kid.
At least the reveal was good.
But it was an awesome reveal. No, that is true. That was an awesome reveal. But, like, the first scene of the heroes in Rise of Skywalker is around the Dejeric table, the Hall of Chess.
Mm-hmm.
And he did that already. He did that in Force Awakens. Don't do it again. Mm-hmm.
But where are you going to be hanging out in the Millennium Falcon?
No, they're on a mission. You don't have to be playing a game. They were on the. Poe goes in the cockpit and immediately flies in this crazy thing, does 5 hyperspace jumps to get home. Why don't you just start with that? Why don't you just start with them flying in that crazy spot to the ice planet? Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
humor?
He starts it in hyperspace. No, and but it was good dialogue. It was funny dialogue.
I don't think
you're
beating
it this
at
all time. Well, you're 250 years old. You should be better than us at this. It definitely felt like a J.J. Abrams movie. The pacing. They didn't stop to do anything.
I love the pacing.
You didn't have a chance to think about anything that was going on because you immediately jumped to the next thing.
Yeah, they don't want you to think about it.
And that's a drawback.
Well, it was a way to pull you into
the
story fast, into the cinematic awesomeness quickly.
But you can do quick pacing. I think Raiders of the Lost Ark's a great example of quick pacing, where my daughter actually leaned over to me when we watched IMAX a few years ago, and she was about 9 years old. She's like, "Dad, I don't know when I'm supposed to breathe." And I was like, yes, but it's not. It wasn't just a constant run. It was... You know, especially considering how movies were paced in 1981, the fact that Indy barely got to rest and then immediately was off in some other crazy thing.
Yeah.
But that I never felt like Raiders felt rushed. It just, this dude never gets a chance to relax. But with this one, it was, okay, we got to run here, then we got to run here. And my friend leaned over to me when we were watching it, and he's like, so we're watching the Goonies Star Wars? Like when they pull out the dagger and everything like that?
The dagger. Isn't it great that Ray was standing in the right perfect spot on
that
little grassy cliff?
That's what I
texted to you. Looking in the right perfect direction. I mean, isn't that great how that all worked out? Two lines
of
dialogue.
Who made the dagger? The Sith,
the ruler thing in the hilt, and pulled
it
out.
And he had a little arrow on it too.
Yeah, like right here. That was
so
too much.
Helpful.
I agree.
Oh, that is so helpful.
Do you know what? Speaking of fan service, I would have loved either this movie or part of a movie to explore the Sith Temple, like and the holocrons and things like that that we all know and love about Star Wars, but never really see them on film. I was geeking out the first scene when Kylo comes out of hyperspace or gets out of that nebula, whatever the heck it was, went to the Sith Temple. You know, sought out the Emperor. But I love the surrounding. I love how he had to get there. All of that, I wish we could have explored more.
All right, you know what? We got to take a break because we have to put one break in here. So let's do this. I want to talk about afterwards. I want to talk about what did you think were the highlights. And I want to talk about each character. And did you think that they progressed? We can come to a consensus, I think, whether we like the movie a lot or not, as to whether... You know, characters actually progressed. And J.J. Abrams supposedly is supposed to be great at character development, so he had a chance to take his characters and either develop them or not, and we'll find out if we thought he did that or not. So, J.J., this is on you.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now, too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Okay. Rise of Skywalker. Some of us liked it. Did any of us like it a lot? Tyson, you'd probably be the one that would be closest to liking it a lot.
I really did. I mean, I thought...
Okay, good.
I have a lot of problems with it. I think we're going to get to some of these. I think Rey's parentage or lineage was a big stretch. I kind of rolled my eyes at that one. I can forgive some things just because I was drawn into the movie and I ate up all the fan service. I really liked the spectacle of it all. It felt like a Star Wars movie where Solo did not at all. I hated that movie. Like, you know, I really didn't like the Last Jedi very much because of what they did to some of the characters and kind of how they were trying to take the universe. But, yeah.
And, Ryan, you liked it best of the three, but...
But it's still, but overall, like, yeah, it just, it's still
the
just
whole trilogy
a mediocre
holds movie. A mess. Let's be
yeah,
honest.
Yeah, exactly.
I gave it three.
It goes all the way
out of five.
I gave it 3 out of 4 because I was in the middle. And here's why. For me, it was 2, but the emotional parts got me emotional enough.
Yeah.
And I really loved how committed Adam Driver and Daisy Ridley were to playing the roles. No matter how bad the story was, or no matter how ridiculous things got, I felt like they really gave their all to being those characters, especially Adam Driver.
Yeah,
and that's
note,
what
Mark Hamill.
It.
Seriously, take a note,
Mark
Hamill.
Hamill
No. Mark Hamill he dissed his own role in Last Jedi before the movie even came out, and that set the tone for that response. And
I
you know what?
Well, that's
fair.
I don't necessarily.
But I'm talking about.
No,
I'm talking about in movie. I thought
movie,
he did
no,
commit in the movie,
and he set that up in Last Jedi. He helped. He was a factor in the backlash of the Last Jedi because that's
Agreed.
The first thing that they ran to is well, Luke Skywalker. Mark Hamill himself said he didn't even wait for the movie to come out.
Never said anything about Mark Hamill's comments. I mean, yes, I'm not saying there was no impact of his words, but.
But I felt like
you knew he screwed
as my excuse.
You knew
why
he screwed. He went up because he retracted all that and said, "Well, no, right as the movie came out." And I think that was the biggest mistake in all of this, in terms of PR, not in production.
Right,
whatever.
Right.
Yeah,
but
PR,
I'm talking in movie. I felt like, and I actually was about
that,
to say
you, that inspired people to hate the movie, knowing that Luke Skywalker himself didn't like his character development in that movie. And I'm sorry if you don't like it, you work with the director to change it, or you don't do it. Flat out. There's nothing in the world that says Luke Skywalker has to be in the movie if you don't like it. So don't do it.
Okay.
And that really upset me that he did that a couple years ago and then tried to backtrack like, oh, no, it's just my job. Yeah, it was your job to do the movie, and if you didn't like it, you don't have to do it. And I think that set the tone for all of this crap, and this is the movie that we got, Rise of Skywalker. It is a conceptual mess. I don't understand how it could be viewed as anything else. We've all agreed that there was no plan, and that got so badly exposed in this movie that there was no plan. I would come off the ledge so quickly if we can all point to moments in The Phantom Menace or The Last Jedi that hinted there was something else out there, or that there was another person, or that maybe a little brief line from Snoke that he's taking orders from somebody, something that can tell, okay, I may not be supportive of this, but at least it wasn't engineered in the third movie out of nowhere.
I think it was
so. Here's a question. Yeah. Well, here's a question. If they had 3 years between each movie, like they did for the prequel trilogy, would one extra year between each one have made a difference?
Yes.
Because part of this is we set the dates for all three movies to come out. You will meet this date. So now, if you're struggling after Last Jedi by not having an overall story arc, but if you're suffering after The Last Jedi to come up with how do we wrap all of this up, an extra year of storytelling development could have helped it a whole bunch.
Or plain old test audiences showed this, and we went back to that. Now, maybe test audiences would have raided it, and they wouldn't want to do anything. But yes, I agree, because we've kind of touched on this before with like Star Trek productions. When you put those hard dates on things, something's going to come out on that date, whether it's ready or not. But when you go back to these streaming services, let's say The Mandalorian wasn't really ready and Jon Favreau was like, I don't know about this. Would they have rushed it to go on in the beginning of November?
I think they would have put the first episode on.
They might have. Okay, maybe that's not the best example, but they had the choice. They didn't have a network contract to air the first episode on, Thanksgiving weekend on ABC TV.
Yeah.
They didn't have. So when you set these dates 17 years in advance and say you're going to release a movie there, you put yourself on the clock and you don't give yourself the opportunity. So Rogue One. That was, 6 months late? Because they reshoot.
No, it was actually Force Awakens was originally supposed to be May, and then they pushed it to December.
So they did a little tweaking.
And then they just said, all right, well, let's just do December releases instead because it made so much more money. But Force Awakens essentially got an extra 6 months.
Yes. And I don't know what it would have been like before that 6 months or after. All I know is, to answer your question from earlier, I walked out of The Force Awakens with a better feeling than any other Star Wars movie because I felt that we were back. And it was on track, and I loved the characters that were introduced in The Force Awakens.
I really enjoyed it. Yeah, okay, so now we're talking about characters, because that, to me, was the thing I liked most about The Force Awakens. I wasn't as huge a fan of the kind of recycled plot, hey, look, this is the Death Star. This planet's so much bigger. And as I watched in the marathon, I was like, hey, what would they do if they accidentally had constructed a Starkiller base pointing the other direction? How would they have hit Hosnian Prime? Like, how does this exactly work? And, how did they miss the sun that they sucked all the energy from when they shot the laser back out? I had all these weird questions that came to my mind. But But I did like Ray, Finn, and Poe. I liked from the moment I met them, they were likable. Like Poe was immediately likable.
Poe was supposed to die in The Force Awakens, wasn't he?
But they liked him too much. Yes, yeah, in the original versions, he was killed in the interrogation scene.
Yeah.
And that would have done a lot to Kylo Ren's character, too.
Yeah, it would have been.
If you had known, moving forward, that, he killed this ace pilot, would you have had such a positive...
He was supposed to die originally? Then who was going to do that super awesome X-Wing scene on...
Another pilot.
On Maz Kanata's, because that was That was a really cool
scene. Babu Freck was supposed to come in a little earlier and be a pilot of the Millennium Falcon.
Boba who?
Babu Freck. The little guy who put all the wires into C-3PO.
He was supposed to come in the first movie?
Yeah, and fly the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, that would have been really awesome. Him and the Porgs? They could have been...
Yeah, he was going to sit on two Porgs to get high enough.
See, I always felt that they were weak characters, except for what
They were likable. They were likable
characters. But he was just as strong as Vader, I think.
They had life, though.
Because
they had life.
It's true.
Because that was the biggest... No. That was the biggest knock on the prequel characters was their dialogue and the performances were wooden and the direction was terrible.
Look at what you've got. Okay, so you've got Finn, which I feel could have been the most interesting.
Oh, totally.
The stormtrooper that turns to the light side.
He didn't turn to the light side. He just wanted to get away. That I actually thought he had an arc over the three movies.
Yeah.
Let's start with Finn.
I'm saying that's what it turned into, right? It could have been that, and that's what they advertised it as at the beginning, right? And that was the most intriguing idea. It didn't turn into that. So then you look at Kylo Ren, what our first ideas of him were, before we actually finished the film, right? It was essentially like, another Darth Vader, which... Again, isn't the strongest thing?
More of like a teenage Anakin, like
he was like Darth Vader, only he hadn't got chopped up and put in armor.
But then by the end of
film, so he wasn't mechanical; he was still flesh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is kind of like what Anakin
like
might have been like
if
Obi-Wan hadn't damaged him so bad.
But then at the end of that film, what do you have? You want to be Darth Vader that's really whiny and, in my opinion, was super
emo Vader. Sure,
yeah, emo Vader. And then you go to Rey's character, which you see a scavenger, and when we were watching the trailers for it, you see a scavenger, so you're like, okay, this kind of interesting, but then by the end of the film, it's just another version of Luke. It's not anything new. The biggest thing that they could have had is if they expanded on that stormtrooper going to the light side, which they didn't. He turned into a sidekick and kind of a boy.
They also had only
briefly addressed in Last Jedi.
Yeah, exactly. Phasma. And then the initial ideas of their characters were interesting, but by the end of Force Awakens, they're not very strong, in my opinion.
No, they're not.
And then,
they weren't developed enough.
And then it gets even worse in The Last Jedi because there's...
Well, I think that's where The Last Jedi falls more. I wanted more character development and I wanted more story pushed forward, right?
Yeah, because of those...
Instead of just the stagnant,
those nonsensical plot twists that didn't really move their character all that much, didn't do anything. It was more focused on them moving in space.
The only character it moved was Luke's, and I didn't like the direction they moved it in.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I think they also missed a huge opportunity with Phasma as well. If you read the book, she's a badass. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and she's gone after that. She
it was just another side
thing.
Character. And but, at some point you get too many characters and you have to choose. I get that.
And I'd rather see
Finn.
That could have been a bigger part of a Finn thing in turning
instead
his
of the
back.
Canto bite offshoot, I think if Finn and Phasma offshoot, like
lost
side story, would have been more.
But the problem is, when you get to this film, I mean, now you have all this wasted time in two films. And you got to make up all this stuff to create some kind of finale, and so there's this battle that he had, this unwinnable battle. He's gonna try to please people that were angered by the Last Jedi. He's gonna try to not because he didn't completely destroy all of Last Jedi. There's a lot of elements in this that
he
are
picked
stemmed,
up through. I feel like
directly
he picked
from
up
Last Jedi.
And took it.
Yeah.
So here's a
but going.
It's an unwinnable battle.
Here's a question. I mean, I know that management at Disney is like, I don't know, is Star Wars still viable? What have we done to it? Do we need to rest it? Whatever. Why are we so stuck in a trilogy? After Episode 8, Kathleen Kennedy said
they're not going to do trilogy style anymore.
Well, what I'm saying is, why didn't you just do another movie and push the finale into the next movie?
Wouldn't it have been cool
10?
To have an even 10?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Do an Episode 10 and finish the Skywalker saga there. Push the story along. Do what you need to do to get it back on track if you think it's off track. Not everybody does. But bring in some, push the characters along, make them more lovable, give them more, you know what I'm saying, give them more something to do, establish more concrete story, and then move forward.
Mm-hmm. They had a clean slate for episode 9 and could have done whatever they want, and I'm just not going to go along with they had an unwinnable they could never have won. They had a clean slate. They had established characters, the ability to introduce their own and
create
any plot
that
any world they wanted to.
Yeah, but
and they chose this route.
Well, here's the problem. Here's why they chose this route. JJ. You said
yes,
that
because he's
you said,
void of original ideas. Said, we saw that in Force Awakens.
Well,
you got away with it.
What I'm saying is, you said just a few minutes ago that if we had another year, it would have been better. I disagree because J.J.'s still the
no,
director.
No, it could have been better. There's a chance it could have been better.
But I disagree because J.J.'s still the director. If it
yes.
was a Gareth Edwards or if it
yes.
was somebody else,
yes.
yeah, totally. Yes, yes, yes. yes.
Yeah, J.J. doesn't
but
answer.
But J.J. at the helm, there's no way
movie.
It would have changed
I think
much
you're right.
more. They just would have been,
it would have been
they
like
would have
saying,
gotten more lost in the weeds and it would have been a little bit more crazy.
It would have been like saying, would an extra year have changed Attack of the Clones. No, George
right.
Lucas was still running the show.
Yeah.
And he clearly wasn't listening to anybody. I think I understand.
J.J. would only have done what George did years later to his original trilogy and changed little things, made little adjustments. Okay. You know, Han didn't shoot first, whatever it might have been in his trilogy. But a new director, a new fresh like lead. I think Disney just got really nervous and just pulled back what was tried and true. And J.J. does what he does best, is mimic what has been done before, make a shadow of it, and then bring everything together.
And so with that stuff said about this film, I was more interested in the characters, their development throughout this film.
Because they had
there was a lot of things that bugged me, the exposition, the way that they made everything very convenient because they had to make up for lost time,
yeah.
right? And so they had to make up a... But if this film... Say that Force Awakens did not exist and Last Jedi did not exist, and they started here at
yeah.
the beginning of that film, and it was three films long. The progression of their characters, to me, is more interesting.
Yeah, true. And I have a
new, and that's
I
why
love
I give
the
this
Emperor.
One, that's why I give this one a better score than the past two. Not
yeah.
much better score, but a better score because it made me interested in these characters more than I have been.
I just want to throw this out as a character thing. I love the Emperor, and I'm giddy about seeing him again, but I have a new name for him.
What?
He's Sith Sack. He's the Oogie Boogie of Star Wars now.
I don't know what either of
all
those
the
are.
Sith live in me.
yeah.
Strike
Sith
me down
Sack.
And all of us will inhabit
Sith
your
Sack.
Body and it'll
like
be
it.
Empress Palpatine.
Would that make Rey Jedi Sack?
No, because she would have become Sith by striking him down in anger.
No, but all of the Jedi live in her now.
Yeah, I
it's
think
the
that's,
same, they
and
said
that's,
the same
that's
thing.
Some, I always thought that was metaphoric, you know, until
course,
the Emperor's
yeah.
like, all of them live in me, and then you see like these crowds of, okay, so those crowds of actual people were the old Sith lords.
Who are
I didn't
they?
Know if there
like,
was actual
what
people
were they
there.
Supposed
if they
I thought
going.
That was stock footage from one of the Lord of the Rings movies.
Well,
it
was,
wasn't? Oh, okay, yeah.
They were all Jar Jars. Did you notice?
In who had the Gungan? Oh, that was in Mandalorian. Someone made a joke about the Mandalorian.
That was on the heist episode.
Are we
going to
break down? So, are we going to break down individual
yes,
characters?
Yes, that's what I'd like to do.
A little bit.
I think it's going to keep devolving. But
I also want to talk about some
we'll start
force
with
abilities.
So more organization and adherence to a plot than J.J. Abrams has. So we're doing great comparatively.
This was my thought on Finn. Finn started out as a stormtrooper who didn't like what he was being asked to do, and J.J. explained it in Rise of Skywalker. Walker as it was the Force sort of calling to him. That's fine, but even if it didn't, even if it wasn't that, I thought he did have an arc. I thought he had an arc.
Yeah.
In the beginning, he was a stormtrooper. Then he became someone who cared about Rey. But he wanted, even in
that,
he was first. He wanted,
one.
Right? He wanted to just get away from all of it first.
But by the end of the movie,
that's why
he
ran with Poe in the first place.
Right.
But by the end of the movie, he cared about Rey.
Exactly.
In The Last Jedi, he cares about Rey, and he's not worried about the Resistance. He's not worried about anything else, and he's not escaping the Resistance just because of his own self-preservation. He's actually escaping the Resistance to make sure that Rey doesn't come back to the doomed thing, and he wants to. Now he does
that.
Want to run away with her.
But
by the
a way
end
of
the Last Jedi,
Rey
the end of The Last Jedi, he actually, you know, he tells Phasma, "I'm rebel scum." Like Rose helps Finn think, you know, he goes to the casino world. He's like, this is freaking awesome.
Yeah.
And she's like, hey, yeah, it's freaking awesome, but not for everybody in the galaxy. And he starts to see the bigger picture. By the end of it, he's committed and he's willing to sacrifice himself to stop the First Order from eliminating the Resistance.
Honestly, that would have been amazing.
if he'd have died there?
Yes. I was hoping he would. I was like, what a great send-off for a character that's kind of just a sideline character now. And it really, what a great sacrifice, mm-hmm. and this is very Star Wars. If he would have went down the barrel of that gun, blown it up, taken out a few walkers with him, and then you know, the rebels escaping out the back that way instead of Luke.
That would have been real
That would
risk.
Have been amazing.
That would have been risk. And that would have been real risk.
Rose saying, we're not going to win this fight by trying to kill the things we hate, but by saving people that we love. And that's actually how it played out in the final movie.
Yeah.
That was Kylo's final act, was to save Rey. Interestingly enough, all the Skywalkers went out saving people they loved. Mm-hmm. All of them. Anakin went out saving his son. Leia went out saving her son. Luke went out saving the people that he cared about, his sister, the Resistance. And Ben goes out saving Rey. I thought that was so cool.
Okay, yeah, that's good. That's a nice point. I'm still...
And Shmi went out because the sand people captured her. But that doesn't count.
Oh, that was terrible.
I thought
Finn progressed, at least as far as that went. He cared about everything, and he went from being the stormtrooper to caring about something beyond himself to someone else, and then beyond someone else to all of us. And now I'm willing to sacrifice my life for people, for just anybody, to make things better, because that's the last step. Everyone cares about themselves, and you can get people to care about family, but... It's when you can. When you could sacrifice yourself for other people that maybe you don't even know very well. Mm-hmm. That's like the top of the Maslow's hierarchy pyramid or whatever that thing is.
I still think they missed a great opportunity with Finn. But that said, who would man the guns in the Millennium Falcon if Finn weren't around? So there's that.
The porgs.
Hey, let's talk about C-3PO, though. C-3PO had a huge arc in this movie, mm-hmm. and wow.
That was pretty cool. It was not just comic relief.
If you would have told me 10 years ago that I would be tearing up over a comedy relief droid in a Star Wars film, I would have laughed at you.
Mm-hmm. That was a great... It was nice to have C-3PO have a... Because R2, more often than not, has an important part of the plot. He has some information. He opens the door. C-3PO is always along in the way and annoying and complaining and making you laugh. And that's always...
C-3PO was the Jar Jar of the original trilogy.
Yes,
he was. And there were people that legit hated C-3PO after Empire Strikes Back, where all he did was complain the whole movie.
And then get blown up, and Chewie had to basically carry around in a backpack.
That was funny. Yeah.
But that was so great, and I even liked that nice little twist, like, really? The only time we've ever wanted you to speak, and you can't? I mean, are you kidding me? I thought that was great. But in that one little plot thing... Why can't we have the consequence of him having his memory wiped?
Yes.
It's okay.
Well, here's...
It's okay.
I think almost a K2SO without being shot, though. He does the thing with the red eyes. He gives him all the information, but it fries his circuits somehow or whatever.
And it would
be funny to have
C-3PO starting over. Like, hey, you guys like this all the time? You guys are in constant peril.
They even made the joke about, well, R2's backups are unreliable. What if his last successful backup was leaving Yavin 4, all those years ago? and like his first reference
is Master Luke? Where's Master...
I understand it's cold on Hoth.
Or maybe it's when they got in the... the escape pod in the first movie, he's like, did we make it to Tatooine?
Or he downloads them, and in the process or whatever, he like punches hits R2 or whatever to get the Leia hologram back. Like, oh, we need to look at this again. Like, he still thinks they're in that mission. They need to find this.
That would have been really funny.
That would have been funny.
You could have done all of that, but oh no, he has his memories back. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
They wiped his memory unceremoniously at the end of Revenge of the Sith, and it worked. That was great.
Because why didn't he know he was Darth Vader's creation? Or why didn't he know that he was Anakin's creation?
But Organa just turned and like wiped their memories. Oh, dear. And it was perfect. That was great. You can still do that in this movie. He doesn't need to have his memory back. He had these great scenes, so have him almost like as a relaunch with R2 at the end. I think that's
hilarious. It's interesting. By the fact that he said R2's backups are notoriously unreliable, I assume that they did that to create the, is it going to work when they do it later? What they should have done is, if he was going to say that, then it shouldn't have worked perfectly like you said, or they just don't say it at all, and then when they get back, they say, hey, R2, don't you keep a copy of C-3PO's memory so that C-3PO's sacrifice, when we see it, as soon as they said he keeps a backup, I was like, then they'll restore him. They're going to do a data from First Contact.
Khan's blood. We're going to use that to save Kirk now. boy.
Nemesis, that's the one I'm thinking of. Like, as soon as I knew that when Data sacrificed, I was like, oh, don't worry, they have dummy Data back on the Enterprise, so he'll be all right. But...
B4, yeah. Oh,
boy. Yeah, so, C-3PO's was good. How about Poe? His arc,
like
at least from what they
movie,
presented,
actually.
From what they presented, Poe starts out as a hotshot pilot. Yeah. He's a hotshot pilot who thinks he knows more than everybody.
Has some leadership issues,
and then by the
end,
what
makes him interesting.
But he keeps fighting because he believes in the resistance. Mm-hmm. And even with his disagreements with Holdo, she could put him in place by quoting Leia to where he had to at least agree with what she was saying.
Hey, I can relate. His whole thing in the second movie was, "We need a plan." That's what I'm saying.
Once again, Rian Johnson looking meta for the whole entire series.
Come on, lady, we need a plan. I mean, that's what he spent the second movie doing.
But then by the third one, he gets, you know, he's trying harder. You know, he's getting on Rey for not being on the missions with us. He's like, we've got real threats right now. Why are you doing here? Who are you getting ready to fight? Like, what's the deal? And then he confesses to Leia. He doesn't know what to do. He leads the charge. He feels defeated. It was his decision to have Lando and Chewie go try to round up everybody else.
Yeah.
So at least his decision paid off. He watches his friend, Greg Grunberg, crash and die.
Did you tear up at that one?
No, because I didn't know enough about the dude. Oh, okay. He wasn't even in the second movie. He was. That convinces me that he's only in there. Dominic Monaghan had a look on his face when he first appeared on camera. He had a look that said, my buddy got me in a Star Wars movie.
Oh, totally.
There was no purpose for him.
It wasn't until the second time that I saw it that I realized he had more than one line of dialogue.
Oh, really?
He ended up with like three or four. Oh. But the first time I saw it, I remember seeing his face. I was like, Dominic Monaghan, that's his
Charlie
name, right?
From Lost.
Yeah. And he was in The Lord of the Rings. But I know he's a J.J. Abrams buddy. And so I was like,
which character
did he play
in Lord of the Rings?
He was one of the two.
Mary.
He was Mary.
Mary? He was Mary. Yeah.
He was Mary. Yeah.
Yeah, and I was trying to point that out to him, though. Like I thought you were
confusing with Sean.
No. It's Dominic.
They were the two that end up with the Ents, the big trees.
Yeah, Mary and Pippin. He was okay, Mary. Yeah.
And I said that exact same thing. He's like, "What are you talking
honestly,
about?"
That kind of took me out of the movie there for a minute, though, when he reappeared, because
he was basically there to help the dialogue.
Anybody could have done that.
Yeah, that's right. Okay,
and that's what I was trying to point out
because he basically had the lines like, "No, Leia, I'm not interested in an Orange Julius. Have you seen where Kylo Ren is lately?" I mean,
exactly.
It was that kind of dialogue.
Oh, yeah.
And the problem was, if you're going to and this kind of goes back to like using the CGI for Moff Tarkin. We know it going in what you're doing. It's almost impossible not to notice it, or at least
on some level,
your brain's trying to pick it apart and expose it. Even if you're not trying to,
you know that Carrie Fisher wasn't in that movie.
So I think anything more than one scene with her doing that was too much. Give her the advice thing. She had a thing where she hugged Ray and gave her advice. That was good enough. Mm-hmm. The advice is universal. You could shoot that anytime.
They had to write dialogue around what they had to use.
They did a few things trying to cover it up, but it was so obvious. One was throwing in Dominic's character, you know, addressing her. And then there was a lot of exposition, too. Like, when she goes off to do her thing to, you know, do some force thing to help Rey and Ben.
Phasma
says, oh, she's going off to do the only thing that she can
do.
Not Phasma. What's the I can't think of her character name.
Conix?
Lupita Nyong'o's character, the one with the big...
Maz Kanata. Maz Kanata's just hanging out now. She's no longer an independent contractor. She's just hanging out.
Anyway, when she goes off, she's like, oh, she has to go and do this thing. She won't be able to survive. And it's like, come on. I can see that when I don't need that exposition.
Let's talk about Leia.
Yeah, you might as well do the whole lean over to Leia. What was that, Leia?
And what are you
whispering to me? Okay, I'll tell them.
I couldn't tell if they were... At some points, I couldn't tell anymore if they were doing it more for Leia's character or if they just thought we were dumb.
You know, but honestly, I was... really amazed that the arc they were able to establish with her in this movie.
They did have to write dialogue around what the usable stuff. It could have been funny if they accidentally had footage of her berating a craft services person and they had to figure out how to work that into the movie. But in all seriousness, though, I actually thought they did a pretty good job of having her feel like, I mean, It wasn't like they showed her from behind a whole bunch of times, you know,
yeah.
so that she couldn't be on yeah. screen, but they constructed dialogue that seemed to work. It felt a little clunky at times.
Yeah, when Ray hugged that stunt double, that was great.
Come on. But I actually thought her, I liked her the way that she went out. I thought that was a good way. They have to have Leia die on screen. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. I mean,
and
they
her
really
connection
couldn't
to Kylo
have her at
the end. Was good because it addressed
cool.
the moment from The Last Jedi
and,
when he held off.
And I love that that you basically just hear her voice, Ben. Oh, man, that hit
and,
me.
And that yeah. stays
that
his hand me. Just long enough for Rey to stab him with his own lightsaber yeah. in her moment of, like, what's she going to do after this? And by the way, now do you see why that Mandalorian episode had to appear before Rise of Skywalker to prove that you could use the Force to heal? Because mm-hmm. that's what Baby Yoda did to
why do you have to prove
to
it?
Carl Weathers. I don't know, but that's why the episode hit before.
Well, I haven't
you
seen
really think it was that
I absolutely think that's
that
why.
It made sense to me.
Huh.
I haven't seen any of the Mandalorian.
They can't even coordinate between the people who make different movies. They're not coordinating between movie and TV.
No.
But that was a Force power that had never been seen on screen before. And then you see Baby Yoda.
I agree.
Carl
that's
Weathers.
Not a stretch to
me.
It was probably
then
done that way for a reason.
Force healing hasn't been seen on screen. Well, you were just talking
until
about that.
This movie.
But Force transportation, I don't know how I feel about that.
Well, they were doing
it's
that
really
in The Last
cool.
Jedi.
I know. But it even got like more.
I actually thought that was kind of cool.
I
if you've gone that far
it.
In The Last Jedi, which was one of the issues I did have with that movie, then you might as well go with the whole...
And having an entire lightsaber battle
through the force.
Through like
that
a
was cool. I'm not going to lie. I thought that was cool. Or when she passes the lightsaber to him through it.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool.
Hey,
I did.
Isn't it great that the Knights of Ren finally got 2 minutes of screen time?
I know.
And the only guy they fight is Kylo
Ren.
They
show up at least five times. Oh.
Why do they not like Kylo all of a sudden? Or, you know, Ben. They don't know he's gone to the light
well,
or whatever.
Well, it's for reasons. Hey, look, something over here. Look at this. I don't know,
they're not force sensitive. Why would they be like,
maybe
hey, man,
Palpatine
what's up?
I don't know. If this
I mean, it's
movie
cool
was
that he
stretched
fights
into
him,
three
but...
movies, it might make sense.
But I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why the Knights of Ren were just kind of a throwaway in this movie. It's because the Snoke guard scene fight took everything out of what that scene could have been in
yeah.
this movie. It's the same scene.
Yeah.
It's six guys previously allied, really, you know, super mm-hmm. good fighters. It, you know, it's a different style of fighter. Yeah. They didn't have the blades.
Meanwhile, Rey's fighting the Emperor's guards at the
it's
same time.
It's sad that they were just a mercenary force that was just a step behind the entire movie.
Yeah.
It's just kind of, yeah. Mm-hmm. But at least they were there, and they were cool. They're cool.
Well, they made such a big deal about the Knights of Ren, Kylo, the leader
well,
of
well,
the
Knights
of Ren.
Well, the second time that they just show up and appear in a scene, and then that's all you see of them, I was like, okay, so how many more? I think that happened three
yeah.
times. And then
and he dispatched them rather easily. And I think the length of that scene reflected the fact that this would be repeating a major moment from The Last Jedi, Kylo versus a gang of guys. And we kind of
But they started
that.
With yeah. that. I actually thought he was chopping up the Knights of Ren at the very beginning of the movie.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. I don't know who they were. They had on the masks, and I don't know. He was just killing people to get to the MacGuffin, the little upside-down
what
triangle.
What do they call it? I forgot what they
the
called
pyramid
it.
Pyramid
MacGuffin. It's like a Sith
I
want to
call it a holocron, but it's not a holocron.
Locator thing. I know that there's locator.
And there just only happened to be two of them, right?
Maybe there was.
But there's only two. One's in the throne room,
that
one's
was
not.
That was a thing that took me out of the movie. And you know, and when my friend said Goonies, I couldn't help but laugh because it really was. It was a bunch of friends going. It was a bunch of guys going from one adventure to the next to the thing, all in a kind of a hurry, and you got your treasure map and all those things. So that took me out a little bit. But back to the character. So Poe, did you feel like he had made it decent?
I hated Carrie Russell's character introduced to be his clear.
Did she need to be in the film?
No,
she did not even need to.
Somebody, I read an article.
She
that
was
said
not interesting.
They introduced.
Wasn't that Maz Kanata's role?
They introduced Janna and Carrie Russell's character just so that everybody would be 100% sure that Poe and Finn were not going to become lovers at
yes.
some point.
And that's
yes.
fine. And I'm so happy that they did not make Janna the daughter of Lando or related to Finn in some way.
Oh, I was scared of that.
Oh, my gosh. When they sat together
didn't
and
even,
he's...
Oh, boy.
I was like, no. And then they stopped. I wonder if it was filmed and they cut it because,
no.
thank goodness...
Okay,
Hollywood's too woke.
Let's get
to
something that probably
like
cuts
that.
A little deeper here. Lando didn't need to be in this movie.
No, that was total fan service. It was fun to see him back in. But.
And if you're going
to
do that, and they just kind of rammed in this
role
for him.
Where he showed up was wrong. Was he on that planet for years since Luke left? Like, that was kind of the impression I got as I watched it the first time. He's like, I was just here to keep trying to find that dagger, because that's what Luke was doing.
And
so
then where
was
he in the other two
movies? Luke was like, Luke and Lando were looking for a dagger, and then Luke started the Jedi Academy, and then Kylo wiped it out, and then Luke went into hiding, or... You know, I thought his introduction was a little clunky. In fact, the moment he came up it looked just enough like the helmet that he wore in Return of the Jedi that I thought it was Lando from the moment
Me
I saw
too.
It.
Me too. And the voice, obviously. But.
Oh, I didn't. I thought they tried to disguise that at least. But if he'd have just showed up towards the end where he said, the second time he comes back, when he's like, we didn't know what we were doing either. If that's where he would have showed up the first time, I think that would have worked. Like maybe a message gets out to him or he's like, hey, I finally got the message that you guys sent out in The Last Jedi at the Battle of Crait. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry I wasn't there sooner. Because, like, what, he just ignored that when they put out the call for help in The Last Jedi?
Him and everybody else.
I got this good thing on Bespin again. I can't mess that up.
So, Lando's, he wasn't necessary, but who was going to fly the Falcon at the end if it wasn't Lando?
Any other the more than qualified pilots that we've seen over and
over. Yeah. But you're not in the final Star Wars movie.
Babu Frick.
Babu Frick.
Babu Frick, whatever his name is.
At the end of the whole saga, it needs to be... one of the main characters flying the Millennium Falcon.
You mean like Chewie?
Well, yeah, but Chewie with somebody.
Why?
Because.
Isn't it Chewie's Millennium Falcon? They never really show a clear chain of custody.
Mm-mm.
Who actually has possession of the...
It's Han.
You mean the original trilogy? Yeah.
No. I'm talking about in Rise of Skywalker.
Oh, in Rise of Skywalker. Oh.
Is it Chewie's craft? Because Poe was piloting at one
it's
time.
It's technically Rey's.
Why is it Rey's?
Because Han gave it to her.
Did he?
Yes.
When?
But didn't she steal it from the guy that got it?
No,
like,
I think
he didn't give it to her. She just took it.
She just
because that's
it.
The ship that was there when
he died. And Chewie's
a
really cool guy for kind of going along with all this.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of asking, why isn't he sort of the captain of this ship now and allowing other people to borrow?
That's a fair question.
I think it is a fair question. Why does Chewie need a co-pilot? He's perfectly capable of flying it by himself.
I'll concede that point. If Chewie was the solo,
even in
I have to say this. It's because Disney. Have you been on the Millennium Falcon?
Because
ride?
The Millennium Falcon is the greatest ship.
If you
in
go
the
on that ride,
ever, including
you'll
the Enterprise,
and you'll hate it. You'll go on that ride, and you'll just be like Disney, oh, again, and you'll understand why Chewie's taking a back seat to everything.
He doesn't want any of that mess.
Oh, my gosh. No, it's worse. It's Disney. That's
what about
why.
Chewie? I actually
There's
felt
no
Chewie gave the emotional impact of the movie when he finds out about Leia.
Yes.
And he gets down. Yeah. Like, that made me cry both times.
Mm-hmm. And his reaction to that was more wailing than when he watched Han Solo die.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he raged when he saw Han Solo die.
Yes,
and he shot Han Solo's son. Which, you got to remember, he knows that's Han Solo's son.
Yeah.
He played with Han Solo's son as a kid, and he shot him.
Yeah, but the scream in The Force Away, that was a scream, that was a Rey scream. In Rise of Skywalker, the Leia scream, that was moaning, that was lamenting.
Yes.
That mm-hmm.
It was he lost. He's lost everybody now. That was the last one, and now he's lost them all.
Yeah.
I would have liked, well, no, I guess, I think
now,
it was okay the way it was.
No, what?
The whole thing about him, he was on the second transport.
Oh,
we missed that one, too.
Right?
Like,
that
was a little convenient, right?
Like the Emperor being alive for 36 years.
I was actually surprised.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, they killed off Chewie right there.
Yeah.
At that scene, I was prepared.
And
that's why I figured he wasn't dead.
Yeah,
that was way too an unceremonious death.
Well, the thing
that's
is,
how he goes out.
And then you've seen him in the trailers in the last battle, too, so you kind of knew. But that scene, before I remembered that, I was like, I'm prepared now to lose characters I love more and more. Mm-hmm. I really thought C-3PO with the red eyes in the trailer, thought he was going to be a goner. And when they supposedly killed Chewie first, before I remembered he was in the trailer at the very end, for a second there I was like, oh my gosh, they're doing it. Oh, this is going to be emotional. Like, this is going to be an amazing emotional ride. But then, of course, other transport.
The other transport.
I did like his thing where... This beast used to fly with Solo.
Yeah, that was fun.
That was a pretty funny part. But I thought they treated Chewie well throughout all three movies.
Yeah.
You know, it helps that he can't speak, probably.
Well, you know what? He got caught by like four stormtroopers, really?
And they didn't bother going around the corner
and,
for the other five people standing there.
True. And you didn't hear him.
Theoretically,
you didn't hear him say anything. You didn't hear him
them.
Shoot.
They said that they would have
there
had the Millennium Falcon surrounded. Although you'd think they would check the ship. I mean,
Chewie
it's a ship sitting on
the
four
steps around a corner and got caught. And
no
one went back to look. Oh,
without a fight. Without a fight.
No,
without
because
a shot.
They knew that Rey was out in the desert part. They sensed it.
They were busy with the second
Force
transport.
Told them.
Busy with the second. Oh, there was a second transport. Yay. Come on.
So.
I mean.
Let's talk about Rey and Kylo because that's the two main guys.
Raylo.
Rey and Kylo. I actually liked I liked both ways. If they'd have left her as the son of nobody or the daughter of nobody, because one
which
of the
Ryan
things
Johnson
that I
really
Ryan
painfully
Johnson,
tried to set up, but
right,
hey.
But and that would have worked for me because he said, you know, Snoke says and Luke is saying, look, the Force is the Force.
Yeah.
The Force does this. If the Force sees an imbalance, the Force creates a balance. Mm-hmm. If the Jedi were too much, the Force allows the dark side to rise to be its equal, and then eventually it balances itself out. Now you've got a lot of light, then it keeps itself in balance. And if they had explored that more, if J.J. had said, all right, let's just do this, that really it's the Force that's the thread through all of this. Mm-hmm. The Force is it, and Luke's trying to say, I've learned that to just say it's the Jedi or the Sith that controls the Force is arrogance. The Force does itself. It is the nature. It's the thread of the whole nine movies. But they didn't. It became a Jedi versus Sith thing at the end, which story-wise is at least consistent. That's what it was through all nine movies.
They could have explored that, especially like imagine in The Last Jedi had Kylo or Ben and Rey explored the gray part of the Force. We know that the gray is an actual.
Everybody wanted this gray Jedi
Force
thing to happen so much, and it never did. I didn't.
That would have been a much larger risk than any risk that was ever taken in The Last.
But
Jedi.
I did you like know, with Rey that it was her saying, "Oh my gosh, I'm related to." I thought it worked better than Nemesis, where Picard's fighting his own clone and somehow had some dilemma that this was like a part of him, even though it never was, never would be. Mm-hmm. At least in this one, she has to question. I'm the granddaughter of the worst person in the galaxy, and I obviously have darkness in me. It hinted at that when Kylo touched the Darth Vader helmet, and she suddenly became unhinged on the training course, and she couldn't get anything until she raged out and took it all out. Like, she could see that she was struggling with the rage within herself, and she doesn't. She takes Luke's track. I'm a danger to everybody else now. I thought I was not, but. You all say you know me, but you don't know me because I don't know myself. And I just really like that. So that at the end, when she decides to, stand up and all the light side of the Force fills in her and she's able to defeat the Emperor, I like that whole arc for her.
Again,
I really did.
A more compelling idea than another Luke.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying about this one is if this was turned into three movies instead of crammed into one, it has a more compelling arc for her there.
If the Emperor had appeared in The Force Awakens, you mean?
No. If that didn't,
no, because that's the whole arc of the final movie.
I'm just saying the arc of their character arcs in this movie were more compelling to me than their character arcs from the beginning of Force Awakens. And if it would have been able to explore it in three movies instead of crammed it into one and not had all that stuff, that would have been more interesting to me.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, I got to give some props to Rian Johnson. I think that The Last Jedi could have been, if they had three or four more movies to really explore where he was positioning the Star Wars universe, I think that the last few movies could be really interesting. And with Rey's parentage being a nobody, the whole thing that you just said about the Force calling people and whatever, still, I don't think, even though she's a Palpatine and even with what Rian was trying to set up, her immediacy in gaining such power and such control through the Force and of the Force is still, I think, unwarranted. Like, she still needed to train more than she did to get to that level. She hopped up beyond Luke so fast, in my opinion.
You could see, though, she
got it from Kylo's brain.
And the whole thing I'm having supposedly a big problem with is her being a Palpatine. That did not need to happen. Yeah. So what happened with Palpatine's own son? Why wasn't he the one groomed to
or
be brought up
Palpatine's
in the Force?
Or was it Palpatine's daughter? They never even clarified
No, they said
that.
It was his son.
Yeah,
they said
it
was his son.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah, so yeah. It skipped the dud. Is a dud son.
Is that what it is?
Exactly. Just said, screw it. Well, little Emperor, little Palpatine, yeah, you're nothing. We're going to skip you, and we're going to... Come on. And when did this happen?
Did he show
by the way,
and he decided to be a nobody? Are
I
you
think
freaking
a fair
kidding
question.
Me?
When did this happen? First term, Naboo Senator? late night
we,
session?
Yeah, we don't want to think
call
about
girl,
it, but
outside?
He only looked like he was in his early 30s. So, and the Emperor's been missing for 30-something years. So after
maybe
the face
Emperor's
melt.
Kim Jong-un.
It was after
know?
The face melt.
I mean,
he had a whole harem of girls. Who knows?
Oh. Then I will execute another order. I mean,
however, I gotta say,
well, that is
Leia's lightsaber looked like Leia's lightsaber.
Yeah,
I'm
it
totally
was one we
just
hadn't
changing
seen,
the.
And it was just like
Adam, that's looks slow good. Clap
yeah,
from Adam.
They got that right. They got the color of the lightsaber right.
What was the color?
It was the design of the hilt and everything.
And why was Leia's CG in that one training montage really so bad? Looks was good.
Did they?
Why was Leia so bad? Why couldn't they not take her face from the movie and put
Pixar
a heart
animation?
On her?
It looked like Pixar animation.
It was worse than Pixar animation.
I thought Luke's was worse.
Was worse than Rogue One animation. It was in
Luke's
the dark. How did they mess that up?
I thought Luke's was worse. Here's why I thought Luke's was worse.
Luke's was fine.
No, I thought that was Ben. I thought that was your son. I thought she was doing
her son.
Well,
because you need glasses. Luke's was fine. Leia's was terrible.
It wasn't until the second time that I was 100% sure.
Leia's,
Luke,
was worse than Rebels animation, and that's bad.
Hmm. Yeah, how could they just get the fleeting scene okay at the end of Rogue One, and even though her mouth in the one looked off, but her face looked fine. Her face just looked, it lacked detail.
Look, if you could have a stunt double
like
in modern movies
almost
take the face off of Tom Cruise and stick it on somebody else and have a believable, why couldn't they do that from the old trilogy and stick it on her for that split second in the dark with a hood or a shield?
Almost seems like he could have gotten some stock footage of her in the camo gear from Return of the Jedi.
Yes, exactly.
You know, there had been a lot of stuff where she
was in a split second. She lifts her blast shield, and it was like, what is that? Thank goodness it was a split second in the dark because it didn't work. And okay, so I would have also liked to have seen Rey make her own lightsaber instead of just at the end. Oh, she pulls that out of her bag. That looks like it was the end of the bat or the
of
tip
staff.
Of her staff.
Yeah. Maybe it was.
Well, where did they get the Kylo crystal? The Kyber crystal. Where'd she get the Kyber crystal? I would have loved. She buried the lightsaber. Could have taken 4 seconds.
Maybe she got it out of Obi-Wan's shop in the deleted
scene. Putting
together
the lightsaber.
Why are we burying lightsabers?
Well, I don't know. So somebody in a future film
yellow,
can find them.
The yellow represent. Like I
don't
watch a YouTube video.
It
where
represents
someone went into
Luke's
this
lightsaber from the original toy before
they
decided it should have been blue.
I can't remember all of them, but I think the yellow one were used by these guardians of some sort.
Of the temple?
Of the temple, right?
The Jedi temple.
And like each color actually did represent something in some lore. I don't know if it was the extended that was discarded or if it's still valid. But why yellow?
Anakin hated Tatooine. And if it wasn't explicitly said, then he should have hated Tatooine.
He did.
Luke hated Tatooine. He didn't seem to be too fond of it coming back in Return of the Jedi. I made a flip comment or two about it. Leia certainly has no fond memories of being on
Tatooine.
Let's see, metal bikini and Jabba's sex slave for a couple of days. That was a lot of fun. So we're going to take their legacy in the form of their lightsabers, and suddenly Leia's lightsaber's a thing. Thanks for creating that out of nothing. And we're going to go back to this abandoned house that hasn't been used in now, 40 years? 40, 50 years, however long, from A New Hope. And we're going to bury those there and take a little walk and tour around a place that Luke never seemed to have any special
Luke
connection
could not
to.
Get away from fast enough.
Leia had no connection
but
to.
But it was where they started.
Yeah, it was where
because you need the two suns scene.
Yeah, because we couldn't do, we have to repeat the end of Revenge of the Sith, when it actually made more sense because that's where they were going to settle in for the next 30 years, living on that planet. But here's a planet that has no connection to the last three movies, no connection to Rey. Actually, it goes back to my original point. Why was Jakku not Tatooine in the first movie in the first place? That kind of, I never really understood why they had to introduce a whole other desert planet.
And I didn't understand that the few Star Destroyers they got out were that close.
There's
to Jakku.
There's so many desert planets.
Yeah.
In the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, because then we got
Jakku, you got Jedha, you got.
Yeah.
I would love to see Jedha explored in the prime of the Jedi, by the way. Make a movie.
That town, yeah.
Gareth, make a movie because you do it well. I don't want to see
Jedha. Before the statues were laying down on their sides.
No. I think they were cut out of mountain ranges. I don't think they were fallen statues. I think they were mountains, small hills, like mountain ranges.
All right.
Watch it again. I think they were.
Why would you have a Jedi laying on his side with a lightsaber in a mountain?
I don't know, because it looks cool from the air? Yeah.
Maybe.
Why would you have an entire Star Destroyer fleet being created in ice?
So, I know, right? Why are they hiding underwater like the...
They're hiding in ice. Oh, yeah. That's where we're going to build a fleet of...
And that's a lot of shit. Like, where did all that materials come from and everything?
The outer
like
rim.
Because they were within the first order.
The Mandalorian's working overtime and got a ton of Beskar steel. Just a ton of Beskar. He is putting everybody... He is bounty hunting everybody.
Hey, do you think Captain Phasma's armor was Beskar?
No.
No.
I don't think so.
It was just
shiny.
Chrome.
Too shiny, too cheap.
Chrome dumb.
Too shiny, too cheap.
Well, so let's talk about Kylo then. Kylo Ben. We haven't talked about his character arc. He starts out as a teenage Vader. wanting to be Vader.
Want to be Vader,
he,
sure.
No, he was basically Anakin Skywalker.
And you know what? Like, yeah. I remember when I rewatched Force Awakens, I remember everybody like hating the fact when they saw Adam Driver's face the first time. Because you went from cool Kylo Ren mask to kind of an emo rage face.
Yeah.
But it was that emo rage that made his character so interesting throughout the, all three of the movies.
You're it made it more relatable.
Interesting.
Really? Yeah. I loved it. I loved the intensity that Adam Driver
put. Character development that the mask didn't give, right? And so, and I think that's why Ryan destroyed the mask.
Take that ridiculous thing off.
Because he needed to have Adam Driver act and emote and grow as a character, which he did beautifully in that movie.
Wouldn't you have loved to have seen his rage scenes in The Force Awakens without the mask on when he's chopping stuff up with the lightsaber?
When he was in the boardroom scene, reminiscent of the Death Star in A New Hope, I loved that scene. When he got the mask
that
back on and he was like throwing people around. That was a cool scene. That was the Kylo Ren that I love, but I also love Kylo when he takes off the helmet too, so I don't know.
Like his fight on the Death Star without the mask was so much better without the mask than it would have been with the mask on.
Yeah.
And I loved, I don't think they could have had a better, I mean, Kylo Ren is Adam Driver, like, in a way that not, well, like, you could have somebody else who Oscar Isaac, somebody charismatic who flies the ship and does the stuff. But if you had Kylo Ren do all the exact same things with another actor, I don't think that works as well.
And what an amazing actor he is to go from Kylo to Ben. It was such a stark difference, right? He was instantly like, well, you were drawn to him instantly and you
really
loved
him. That was really good in this film. And that's probably the biggest transformation in his character that I enjoyed.
Yeah.
Well, you know, he's got to be, it's either a great performance or really something that he's bringing. He killed Han Solo in the first movie and we still like Kylo Ren. We still think Kylo Ren is an interesting, we don't treat him as like an evil emperor character, like, oh yeah, this guy's got to die. No, he was a dynamic character that did some bad stuff that was still compelling. He didn't get tossed into the trash heap of just being kind of a one-dimensional villain after killing Han Solo. Well, there was still more after that. We may have been disappointed, we didn't like that, or we were saddened by it, but we didn't necessarily hate him. I didn't necessarily hate him.
I was never mad. No. I never disliked the character for killing Han Solo. I disliked J.J. Abrams for killing Han Solo
The character for just being
Anakin.
I would have loved it in
Anakin
a second
2.0.
movie.
It's but wanting to be like Anakin.
But I thought he was just not. I thought it was I thought his rage and his frustrations were kind of almost reflective of kind of the generational state that we're in now. You had Anakin, who had kind of like legitimate issues growing up, and you can kind of excuse his problem. Now, here's Kylo Ren. For all intents and purposes,
he's like royalty.
He should be like living a comfy life out in the suburbs. I mean, I'm trying to relate it to national. So to me, Kylo Ren always struck me as the late 20th century, early 21st century suburban youth angst. Why do you have this angst and these problems when you have everything? You have a comfy life, good education, you have access to food, medicine, all these other things, and you can have that's where Kylo Ren was completely different from Anakin Skywalker. Anakin Skywalker was a slave.
Yep.
So I understood his rage, and I understood going back and seeing what happened to his mother and that turning, and those were good moments for his character. But Kylo Ren is just an angsty teen.
But so it also seems like a whiny baby to me. Like,
yes, and that's the thing.
But that's
wait
until
your kids get a little older.
But he grew into more of an adult and more of a menacing character.
Because I tell you what, the most emotional part for me and the part where I openly wept and hoped that my son who was sitting next to me didn't see was that scene where he has the scene with his dad again.
Replayed in his head the exact same
scene. And it was the exact same
with
way.
A different turner.
But that only comes from the fact that he killed him, not because he was a whiny baby up until the point that
he killed him.
He could have been a completely different character, still had that same scene, and then that scene that we saw in this one would still have
mature enough in The Force Awakens to have that scene play out like
it
did.
There was no good reason he should have hated his dad. His dad being gone a bunch, some, yes. His dad not being able to relate to him because Anakin has Ben had force powers.
Yeah, and that's about, and that didn't. Unhinged, unfocused anger that you see in kind of a modern teenager.
This is where The Last Jedi, where he's like, say it, Rey. He's like, you go around, you need parents. Like, you start projecting. You want your parents to come back so bad. You just pick them out. You pick out Han. You pick out Luke. You pick out these things. And she's like to him, why? Why would you kill your parents? He loved you. I loved Kylo's character. I didn't think
people who loved Kylo before The Force Awakens came out. I had one kid in my neighborhood who's like, I love Kylo so much. He's like the greatest. I'm like, we haven't seen the movie. Yeah. You like his mask. That's about the best you could say.
Well, he does look cool. That's sure. That's
my complaints sure. about yeah. this movie, I can't recall anything that connects to either Adam Driver's performance, really even Kylo Ren's arc. I mean, some little behavior that might blame on bad writing or producing or whatever. But he is not part of any of my problems with any of the movies in any shape or form. I thought Adam Driver has done a marvelous job.
Yeah. And yeah,
I think that was the most difficult job coming into this, is how do you create that sort of nebulous villain kind of a character and actually make it work to where we care? Because how easy would have been for another actor who maybe just wasn't up to it, and after he did that to Han Solo, he's just a jerk villain. That's all we care about him now. No, we still had an interest in him.
I think that's fair. I hadn't thought too much about that. We assumed because he was already Han's son that, you know, he's got some built-in goodwill thanks to us loving Han and wanting the best for Han and Leia.
But Adam Driver put it all together.
Oh, yes. That's what I said. I can't see another actor who could do what Adam Driver did.
Yeah.
And I'm glad they cast him. I will say this. Great casting choices.
Great
casting choices. If you didn't like what the characters ended up being,
the casting choices
were all spot on.
And let's go back to another parallel with that, because it always drives back to Star Trek for me. To me, this entire thing copies my trip through the Abrams Star Trek movies. I walked out of Star Trek 2009, I might have even called
we were there,
you
and I.
I was blown away by how good it was, how fresh the characters seemed, how much love was poured into it. Sure, and the same with Force Awakens. There are some silly things with the plots, and suddenly Scotty's beaming people through Warp 9 or whatever, which... but, I always envisioned it of how my late father would have viewed it, and my father would have flipped out and loved that movie so much because he loved McCoy. He loved McCoy in the original series. He loved that raspy, irritated doctor, and he would have screamed out laughing.
Is there a person that didn't love McCoy? Seriously?
But... he did all that. He introduced these great characters. The casting was perfect. Zoe Saldana as Uhura was probably one of the best choices of all. I mean, she just brought so much.
She brought a modern vibe to it, too, without feeling forced or slapping you in the face.
Yes.
With, look at how good girls are.
Yes, exactly. And
she just
then,
was. That's the same thing with Wonder Woman.
Then J.J. Abrams should have left. You've given us the gift of these really good characters, this really good casting, and... you did the reheating a previous plot element or something for the first movie, so we're all enough familiar with it to get established. Now let's turn the reins over to somebody else to take it in a new direction. And if you think Rian Johnson did a bad direction, Disney's next mistake was to return to J.J. Abrams.
Yeah, they should have tried tried someone else.
Since they didn't have an arching story plot for the three movies, I think that having the three different directors would have worked. If they had said, okay, here's our overarching story.
Yes.
Now you directors go do it. Yeah. Now you directors go do it.
Kevin Feige?
Feige.
Kevin Feige.
Didn't they just give him some Star Wars movies, by the way? Did I hear that?
Yes.
Put him in the Lucasfilm or something?
That's because he knows what he's doing and he can
Well, I always got the sense with the Marvel movies, we're going to plot out it might be 17, it might be 23 movies. We're going to do a lot over the next few years. And all these individual directors that are coming along, we're going to need you to do this extra little scene at the end to set up the next movie. And, here's some rules. You can't do time travel. We're going to do that at the end. If you do time
here's
travel...
the sandbox you play in.
Yeah. If you do time travel in Winter Soldier or working into Age of Ultron, that really takes the punch away from your big, happy... humongous
resolution.
Ending. Mm-hmm. So it just seems to me that along the way, they made some little tweaks to Thanos. They had to make a little tweak to the Tesseract.
As you watch the arch of the movies for Endgame, that's also a great example of how to start to pivot. They didn't start out with Thanos and Endgame when they started Iron Man in 2008.
No.
In fact, you'll see because that's how suddenly the Tesseract became an Infinity Stone. That's how the globulous stuff from Thor the Dark World somehow became an Infinity Stone. In fact, it's really not a stone.
Yeah, it's not really a stone.
But that's what they did.
Infinity
they said,
goop.
Oh, we can actually use this. Yes, it's going to require a little bit of a leap of faith from the audience. But suddenly they pivoted from just introducing the characters and saying, okay, now let's go here. And it paid off. And
but
I think some of our criticism of Star Wars some of it, not all of it, because we've listed some actual legitimate gripes. Things that take us out of the movie are legitimate gripes, especially if they were avoidable. But Endgame and the Avengers arc showed us what we could have.
Yeah.
And once, and especially within the same calendar year, to then have this other one that we had poured in 40 years worth, not just 10 years worth, but 40 years, our entire lives into. And then we thought, I mean, I'll admit, there's a part of me that's like, I wish we could have had that.
Marvel movies across 11 years in two different ownership groups showed more organization on a grand scale than Disney and Lucasfilm got through 4 years and three movies released in 4 years' time. They show more organization across 22 movies in 11 years than Disney could have managed for three movies released in 4 years. And that's to me, is the greatest disappointment, because Marvel might have had an Endgame, pun intended, but along the way, you saw each individual director, writer, producing team had the opportunity to do their own things. Taika Waititi was able to take Thor in a radical different direction.
The best Thor movie.
But it still worked for Marvel because it needed to do the things to set up Infinity War. It had to.
And interestingly enough, Chris Hemsworth wanted to make sure that they didn't walk back those changes in Infinity War and was glad that they kept him in the fat suit when it got to the end part, to the big, the trifecta fight against Thanos. I admit, I half expected him to, when he lightninged up, he wouldn't be fat anymore. And that they kept it, I thought was really good.
That's allowing the right parts of the series to evolve.
I didn't want to see Thor get fat. I bet there's a lot of fans who didn't want to see Thor get fat or had hoped that he would get thin.
Why not? It's hilarious.
It was hilarious.
He's not going to be fat forever.
Well, but you know, long time Thor fans, we just don't know how many there are because Thor was never one of the big ones. If they tried to do with Spider-Man what they did to Thor, there'd be a lot more outrage. Let's be honest.
Well, they couldn't do it, though.
Well, but if they did, I mean, the Spider-Man in the comics grew four extra arms in one story arc.
They did that in the animated one. What did I get? Into the Spider-Verse.
Yeah, from a different timeline, not the main timeline. That was the letting them have their cake and eat it, too.
The Sony timeline.
So here's a question to wrap it up, because we could probably talk about this for hours on end. But to wrap it up, what would you like to see for the future of Star Wars?
Direction.
Okay.
A plan.
I don't want to see any more Star Wars, to be honest. I'm a little tired.
I do.
I got to be honest.
Are you talking about movies?
I do.
Movies. I mean, the other stuff, like The Mandalorian. Yeah, fine.
Have you been watching The Mandalorian?
No, I haven't yet. I haven't gotten the...
Dude, how did you miss Baby Yoda?
I have too many subscription services.
I'll cancel all of them but Disney Plus.
And Andy will vouch for this.
I can't afford anymore.
About 6 weeks ago, I was totally
on
the sideline.
He wasn't going to watch The Mandalorian until all the episodes
were out. I was
totally on the sideline
for two reasons. Number one, I want to stick to my philosophy of only one streaming service. I'm on All Access now ahead of Picard, and I'm reviewing some episodes and stuff
man,
like that.
I have to watch that when it comes out. Sorry, that's one that I just have to watch.
I'll phase in and out of Netflix like once a year if I get a free month or I just want to catch up on a couple of things. But I'm totally with you. I don't want to look back and realize, oh my goodness, I'm doing $50 a month for five subscriptions and I'm watching one. So my plan was originally, no, I'm going to just wait till The Mandalorian finishes and then I'll just binge it on a weekend. But it was just too good. I mean, I just read too many reviews from people about it being so good and being fresh. I was like, okay, I'm going to jump into it. But that was my original plan.
If you've never listened to Adam Thomas, he's a cynical guy.
What?
If you
Adam
couldn't
Thomas,
tell from this episode, he's a cynical guy.
I didn't have high hopes for the Mandalorian series. I just didn't. I just did not have high hopes. I just saw how rocky The Last Jedi was, even though I liked it. It just didn't seem – it never seemed as focused and as tightened up as Marvel movies. Like – I want to watch this movie.
Did you?
They want to. They have a plan.
And don't forget, Adam had a falling out with Marvel for a stretch too.
That's true.
During the 10 years,
did you watch the Clone Wars?
Oh, I haven't gotten to that yet. No.
Okay, if you would have watched the Clone Wars, you probably would have been on board with Mandalorian first off, because the writing is so good, the execution is so good.
So out of all the animated series, should I start with the Clone Wars?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, because there's Resistance.
I didn't enjoy Rebels. I enjoyed.
Because there
are Disney
Plus.
You didn't like the Darth Vader parts of Rebels?
No, Rebels is fine, but start with Clone Wars.
Oh, sure.
And that's
Ahsoka Tano is created.
Who you hear now in the, you know.
Okay. You heard her and you didn't know
You heard her and you didn't know
The Star Wars Christmas special is not on Disney.
No, that is not. Funny enough, though, if you're listening to this.
You'll never find it.
Search back through our podcast episodes because we talked about the Star Wars Christmas special. I believe it was about a year ago.
Yeah.
One of the funner episodes we did because that thing is something. But for future of Star Wars, the streaming service. They are going to make some movies. I know that they're going to let the market cool a little bit, which I think is a good idea.
Didn't they say there's an episode 10 coming out in 3 years?
No.
I swear I saw this somewhere.
No, this is the end of that.
Okay,
so the Game of Thrones trilogy was thrown out. They're not doing that. The Rian Johnson thing was officially canceled? Or?
Not officially canceled. He just hasn't talked to them in a while. It's still officially on the books.
Are you sure it's not officially canceled?
I had not heard that
it was
officially
canceled. And the Boba Fett standalone movie was basically channeled into The Mandalorian.
And same with the Obi-Wan movie, which is now going to become a series. So we're going to get a Ewan McGregor Obi-Wan series.
I want to see that.
By the way, this director forgot her name. She has now directed 2 Mandalorian episodes, and they have been 2 of the best episodes. She's doing Obi-Wan. So it's good.
I know Bryce Dallas really Howard did one of them. So,
hers was amazing. You're going to love that one. There are 2 that I could just...
Well, I
know. Like.
I've seen all the episodes.
Which
one did Bryce... It was the 3rd or 4th.
The one where they were at the camp in the ATSD?
Oh, yeah. Because she
that was...
That was
hers.
Yeah, apparently that was her direction to make it like a dragon. That was a medieval jousting episode of Star Wars.
So good.
Yeah.
And the red cockpit lights, and so it looked like a red dragon. Yeah.
Yes, and it looked like it was breathing.
And here's what I think. I think Star Wars should focus on streaming because you can tell longer stories. You can break it up. You can take the time you need. You can have a mid-season break if you need to.
So this takes me to what Martin Scorsese said about Scorsese. Sorry. I'm terrible.
His cousin is Martin Scorsese.
Yeah. Sorry. Anyway,
he's nice too.
What that guy, that famous director that I just messed up his name, what he said about Marvel, right? And it was more paraphrased to me when I was in a conversation with someone. And what I was told is that he said it's not a necessarily a one and done, but it's like here's a story and you kind of move on, right? Yeah. Where it's kind of turning into a big TV show that you're going to the movie theater with Marvel, and I feel Star Wars is going that same way, and so I feel that streaming, because I'm kind of getting tired of the big TV show that's actually movies, right? And so I am in agreements with you that going with streaming is what I want to see. I'm kind of tired of
streaming. I think for having a universe, streaming works, because by having a universe, air quotes, that allows you the time to build it out.
Yeah.
When you're limited to 2 hours every 3 years or every 2 years, there's a limit on what you can do. You have to justify the fact that the picture's there. And I think that some of the criticisms, even that you have, Adam, are part due to the fact that we had to have a movie, so we have to have something. And then by the fact that they set the date, we have to have it by this date. That's why I said in my TV review, J.J. Abrams was in somewhat of an impossible position in that I've noted your disagreements, but he was in somewhat of an impossible position because he had a date that he had no ability to change. He had... he had to end the most beloved movie series of all time, and he did what he did.
Yes, he did.
And I liked a lot of it. I didn't like all of it. I was taken out of some of it, and I don't like being in a Star Wars movie where my instinct is to lean over to my best friend growing up and make jokes about the stuff I see. We had a whole thing about what were the people on the ship doing when they're having a tug of war? Punch it, man! I can't
try. Have
you
been on Star Tours?
I don't know why we're not going ahead.
Were like on Star Tours, just being thrown around. Here's why I want some Star Wars movies. I agree with you for the streaming. I agree with you with being able to tell multiple stories and building up more of the universe and seeing more of it. But I would love to see a few more Star Wars movies because, A, bigger budgets.
True.
But
although
they
I gotta
to be,
say, the Mandalorian looks pretty dang good.
$100 million project.
I'm still saying, bigger budget.
They
bigger
still got
budgets.
A boom in one of the shots.
Episode 9 was... huge budget.
And I'll tell you what, the difference is Mandalorian is almost all studio and green screen.
Yes.
I do know.
Well
that.
Thought out, the right people in charge.
Except for
well
Baby
thought
Yoda.
Out. If Kevin Feige had the chance of a Star Wars movie, would love to see it. Well thought out, plan done. Mm-hmm. I want to see more offshoot like Rogue One, little stories within the universe that you could still be told. There's a million of them. I love Rogue One. Like that's one of my favorite Star Wars movies.
I don't understand the
hate. Do people hate Rogue One?
There's a lot of
hate out there.
Even my brother doesn't like Rogue One. And me and him, we're pretty in line. Like, my brother called me at 7:30 Eastern Time yesterday, Thursday night, 5:30 Mountain Time. What time was that? He had just gotten out of the 5 p.m. Eastern in Detroit screening, got into his car, and called me. We talked for 2 hours about... basically what we've talked about for the past 2 hours.
Yeah.
But he doesn't like Rogue One. Hmm. And some of the things he said, well, it's just it's like it's a very different movie, and the fan service stuff they did was all good.
Yeah,
I mean,
fan service led towards a resolution.
Yeah, I'm sorry, that last 30, 40 minutes, that to me is Star Wars.
Yes.
It's a whole bunch of ships blowing each other up, and Wilhelm screams in there.
Yes.
That's always what Star Wars is, and that's the difference between Star Trek. Star Trek is sci-fi. It's a little bit more of the mind and things, and the exploration of humanity, so to speak. Star Wars is supposed to be just that. It's space wizards and aliens shooting it up.
Space cowboys.
And the 30, 40 minutes where they're just cutting from, just like Return of the Jedi, that awesome editing job from the ground fight to the secondary fight, and then we had ships, little moments on scenes, and then the Hammerhead Corvette. To me, if you have a problem with some of the characters, and I do, I think that should have been more of a Cassian vehicle, Rogue One. The Rogue One should have been about the Secret Service and the spies, not necessarily this one character who was just kind of on the outside. Combine all
you
that.
You could have had Jyn, and she could have been related to that, but if the focus had followed Cassian through the whole thing.
I think that's most people's issue is her character. When I've talked to people about it, that's the
Jyn
main issue.
Jyn is a product of our time and social norms right now.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? They could have combined Jyn and Cassian. Jyn could just be a rebel secret super agent who happens to be the daughter, and that's been her lifelong quest to find her father and stop whatever he's doing. To me, that would have worked. But that last 30 to 40 minutes, I still, just like I used to with Return of the Jedi, where I'll pick it up.
Just jump straight to the one spot?
Because in Return of the Jedi, the third part of the laser just started when Chewie used the crossbow to open up the inner door. And it's like, hurry, the fleet's going to be here any minute.
Into the trap.
Hurry.
That's my favorite musical cue in Return of the Jedi, other than maybe the sail barge assault. But with to go to what you guys were saying about, I do agree, Tyson, I do want movies. But I want Star Trek 2 type of movie where you can take a thing from a piece of this big universe you've built over time, and then you could say, you know what, that was a really interesting thing. What if we built this out into a 2-hour, you know, Best of Both Worlds would have made a good movie.
Oh, yeah.
It would have. It kind of was a movie broken into two parts, going back to Star Trek for that. So I think that there should be a relationship between the both, but Star Wars has enough of a canon in all the different mediums, and it has enough of a following, and it has enough of a legend, for lack of a better term, that a streaming service would allow that to build. It'll be interesting to see how we feel about Marvel now that they're moving a lot of things to Disney Plus when those Falcon and Winter Soldier come out. Maybe they're going to set the template.
Well,
That will be good to go.
And we're also going to get a Cassian
movie. And
then
Scorsese's complaint streaming. That superhero movies are pushing everything out of the megaplex, out of the theaters. If the streaming world can allow these universes to be built, maybe we can get more of those things in the theater so that every once in a while the big one comes out.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, I think,
it does.
You know, streaming
it
series
could help both.
Streaming series also gives you the opportunity to try out some material. You're going to probably make a profit on it through the monthly subscription fees. You can always adjust the budget to make it a little more modest. $100 million for a limited series is one heck of a budget. And then that way you can try out the certain things. So let's take The Mandalorian, for example. If Disney had no idea what was going to work or not, what have they learned from the 8 episodes here? Well, first of all, the Mandalorian character does work. Baby Yoda certainly freaking works. Mm-hmm. And really, the idea of going into this bounty hunter world and kind of, that ended up working too. And I bet you they had some doubts
about
that. But the whole Boba Fett project
fell off.
How about
the big, strong female shock trooper?
Yeah, Cara Dune.
Believable?
Yeah.
Because she's not like 20 pounds a weight and somehow taking out these big guys.
Yeah.
She's big. She's strong.
Yeah, she's
I don't understand how she could punch barefisted Beskar and not be hurt, though.
It hurt. She just didn't show it. She cried
she
off
vulnerable.
Camera.
Like, she took him down pretty good. And anyway. One last.
She was a shock trooper. They're the people you drop in, and she managed to survive a whole bunch of being dropped into Marines kind of
a
situation.
We need to wrap this up, but and I'm going to let you do that. But one last super quick tangent. The old man forgot what scene. Was he Frank Oz or John Williams?
I think it was John Williams.
Was it John?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm
I thought
so
it was
glad.
John too, but I wasn't sure if it was Frank.
I'm so glad he got a moment on screen.
Yeah, and he said this is the last Star Wars film that he will do music for.
It's the last film he's going to do music for.
Oh, last film?
The last film.
I just thought it was last Star Wars film.
Well, it's
something tells me Spielberg can get him to do one more if he asks nicely.
I agree.
He's 91 years old.
But he's done with Star Wars, and what an amazing soundtrack. Like, he's going out with a bang.
Mm-hmm. But you know what? Having said that, I'm excited to see other composers give this a try.
Yeah.
Because I love the music in The Mandalorian.
Yes.
And
Ludwig
I think
Göransson has done a great job.
It fits so well.
So good.
Yeah.
Well, guys, as we hear that music, that means it's the end of the trilogy. It's the end of the quadrilogy. It's the end of everything. I'm playing the Force theme. And that means right now, we're looking into the twin suns.
Wondering if the Emperor is really dead.
Or if he's going to come back.
How we survived the Death Star explosion.
What's that in the background? Oh, boy. Here
it's the Joker.
Again.
No. Guys, it's been fun. We've enjoyed. We've loved Star Wars like crazy. And we're going to continue to love Star Wars. And thankfully, we still get Star Wars. We've got Disney Plus. We'll see some more movies in the future. It's a billion-dollar IP, intellectual property, so we'll see some more.
You know what?
This was the end of the saga of our youth.
Let's get a prequel movie with The Client.
I would love to see Werner Herzog do some things.
Just lecturing
Where
people
did he come
for
from?
Two and a half hours.
Where was the young...
Let's have him drop back into like the time of Rogue One or something. It's like, you know, leading an assault, just like, lecturing people about, you know, the futility of things,
or just whatever his that'd actually be pretty fun. I could listen to Werner Herzog talk all the time. Well, Ryan
Great
Meeks,
casting.
Adam Thomas, Tyson Webb, it's been fun talking Star Wars with you guys. I'm sure we've got lots to come. We've got Picard series coming in January.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of things that we can talk about in the future. But that's it. That's the wrap on our Star Wars Rise of Skywalker chat. We're gonna have a lot more good stuff. If you've never listened to our show, if this is the first time you followed a link from social media, we invite you to become a subscriber. You can do it through Apple Podcasts. You can do it through Google Play Music. And you can even do it through Spotify. We'll have links on our Facebook page, Fan Effect Show. That's EFFECT. Or follow us on Twitter, at Fan Effect Show. And we got a lot of good stuff coming in 2020 and beyond. And we'll catch you at the next one.